It's time for the PowerMizzou.com podcast with interviews and analysis of your Missouri Tigers. Now, here's your host, Gabe DeArmond.
Welcome back to another week of the PowerMizzou.com podcast. Next few weeks on the podcast, we're going to kind of check around the SEC. At least Missouri's opponents may check out in West Virginia, too. Talk a little bit of spring football, and we're going to start that today. Checking in Nashville, Tennessee with Chris Lee of VandySports.com. Chris, how you doing, man?
Great, man. Gabe, you're one of the best guys in the business of what you do. Always a pleasure to be on with you, and I appreciate you asking me to come on today.
I appreciate that, and the check will shortly be in the mail. want to start, we will talk some spring football, like I said, but obviously that probably hasn't been the biggest story in Nashville the last few weeks. Just kind of take me through the coaching change. I mean, from the outside looking in and talking to you, it was kind of Kevin Stallings was getting out ahead of the posse, and then they went about finding a replacement for him.
Yeah, that's absolutely what happened. There were so many lies told in the ending Vanderbilt press conference and the starting one at Pitt that it was a little bit ridiculous, but that's exactly what happened. They were going to get rid of him, and they hoped that they could find a quote-unquote buyer before they had to do it, which, you know, for financial reasons and maybe for some perception reasons, maybe it hurts you just a little bit if you're the guy that just fired a guy that went to the NCAA tournament. I think most people knew that they had a ton of talent they underachieved. I don't think that was a big deal, but that's the way Vanderbilt does things. Yeah, the swap basically of getting rid of Kevin Stallings for Bryce Drew without knowing what is going to happen from here on out. The more that I hear about Bryce Drew, the way I saw that he handled his press conference, I think that they really did about as well as they possibly could in that whole transition.
Now, let me ask you, because, you know, I've been through a few basketball coaching changes here, and names like Bryce Drew's have come up, not Bryce specifically, but, you know, Ben Jacobson, Doug McDermott at one time, some Missouri Valley type guys. And my question about guys like that always is, okay, they've done it at that level. Can they recruit at the level needed to win at this level? What's your take on, is that the question with Bryce Drew?
Well, anytime you're at a place like that, Gabe, and I spent a lot of time talking to a beat writer. We do a podcast on iSight, too. And if any Missouri fans are just interested to know what they're getting, we had a very really revealing podcast with a guy who covered him. And I got into that specifically. And the first part of that is when you're at Valparaiso, you're not going to find in baseball what they call a five-tool guy, where he does all of it. You might get two or three of the tools, or maybe more like it, one. And you develop around those tools, hope you add some other things, and you go with what you got. You're not going to get a McDonald's All-American. So knowing that he wasn't going to get that, you look at it and you say, okay, can you project what he can get at Vanderbilt? And here's two things that I really took as key takeaways. One, they have always had a very good international pipeline. And really, I guess two and a half things, because a couple of kids that he got were – the children of Gert Hammack and Rick Smith, who were both NBA players. So there's a little bit of that connection too. Those are foreign kids who, I guess, Bryce Drew maybe had some connections to the dads through the NBA circuit. So that helps a little bit. And the other thing is they recruited Illinois and the Chicago area really, really well. And there's a ton of talent up there. And he got some good players and some of the bedrock of his team basically from those two places. I think that given the pipelines and given just the likability factor, man, if you could go watch the press conference online yesterday, he is instantly likable. I just think those things are going to give him a really, really good head start.
And I saw Damian Jones is going pro. I haven't seen anything on Wade Baldwin yet. I don't know if that decision's been made, but what's his first team going to look like compared to the one that I think most people thought was one of the country's biggest underachievers this year?
Oh, well, there's no doubt about that. I think you'd be hard-pressed to find anybody that underachieved more than Vanderbilt did. Right now, Wade Baldwin is more the sure thing. He is declared. And there may be – look, I'm a big Wade Baldwin fan in terms of the talent, but I think also his head started getting filled with his own press clippings starting about the end of November, and I think it affected their team. I think even though – I'm not going to say they're a better team without Wade Baldwin, I think they're maybe – you get some benefits in terms of some team chemistry that you lose in talent. Damian Jones, I don't think there'll be any benefits in terms of losing him in terms of chemistry. I think Damon's a really, really good kid that everybody likes. Yesterday, it sounded like he was hedging his bets a little bit, but he sounded like a kid that was going to go. I think both of them should go. Mm-hmm. They're probably in that 15 to 20 pick range, both of them. Maybe Baldwin a little better than Jones. Look, Gabe, you know this as well as I do. We love to see those kids stay in college and cover them, but for their own sakes, I think that at that point you just go. Now, having said that, I don't think either of those families is hurting for money. I'm not going to say they're rich, but I don't think it's a situation where, you know, somebody's starving at home and they've got to pay the bills. But I would expect both of them to go, with Baldwin being more likely.
Last thing on hoops, I mean, they were a tournament team this year. Is that pretty much the clear goal, even though it's a coaching change in Bryce Drew's first year?
I think it should be. Joe Lunardi came out with bracketology today, had them as a 9 seed. Now, I don't know what premise he put that on, but even I think if you lose Jones and Baldwin, you got some talent. Luke Kornet is probably going to be an NBA 5 or a stretch 4. I think they can build around him. He was hurt last year. They get a couple of good freshmen. Peyton Willis, the point guard, is supposed to be very underrated. Cleavon Brown, the wing from Texas. I hear kind of the same things about that he can give them some things. They got some foundation pieces, and Jeff Roberson, Riley Chance can't help but be better. And the big thing that I'm watching, Gabe, is Alec Peters from Valpo. Their best player last year, 18.5 points, 8.5 boards. He is a graduate transfer. And his big man coach is already on the staff at Vandy. The thing that I'm hearing, he's a borderline NBA prospect. I think that maybe people want to see what he does against a higher level of competition. And maybe I'm connecting dots that aren't there, but the people that I've talked to think there's a pretty decent chance that he transfers to Vanderbilt. And if that happens, I think that really helps ease the blow, especially losing Damian Jones. I think it's like that, Gabe. I'm not going to say they're like a top 25 team, but I think a tournament team is probably what they are, unless they don't get those two freshmen, which I think they will.
Talking with Chris Lee, VandySports.com. All right, let's move over to football. Year three of Derek Mason. Vanderbilt was maybe the first school in the country to start spring football. I mean, it's over out there. So just kind of generic big picture takeaways.
Yeah, I told him, I said, first of all, when you guys do this next time, can you not, like, get rid of a basketball coach? Because
right.
It was just so much to cover at once. Of course, baseball is a big thing at Vanderbilt, too, so I had my hands full. But, yeah, I think that, and Gabe, you've had me on this a few times. You know that I think when they stink, I'll call it like it is. I don't see a team that maybe is going to be, certainly not going to be terrible this year. I think defensively, they've got enough parts and pieces there to get it done. They lose Stephen Weatherly at the NFL early, but they didn't lose a whole lot else. Their offense, and you know this as well as anybody covering Missouri, they can't be any worse.
I don't think I'm overstating it when I say that game between Vanderbilt and Missouri last year, I can't imagine there was a worse game to watch in college football all season long, except I think maybe Virginia Tech and Wake went to overtime scoreless.
I think the sports writing term for that is pillow fight, isn't it, maybe?
That was awful.
It was bad. And look, let's give some credit. The defenses, as bad as the offenses were, those were two pretty good defenses too, especially Missouri's. But I do think that, you know, last year they ended up starting Kyle Shermer as a true freshman, kind of before he was ready. There are some tools there. His dad is Pat Shermer, who, of course, everybody knows is a brilliant NFL offensive mind. So I think the kid has got the brains. I think his arm is okay. Wade Freeback, their backup quarterback, took some enormous steps forward. And he's got NFL arm talent. Now, I don't know if the rest is there, but the rest of it certainly took a big step forward. Ralph Webb, I think, is a nice foundation block. And their offensive line should be a good bit better. They've got a couple of young offensive tackles that are developing. One kid in Justin School who had to sit out a good bit of the year after breaking into the starting lineup as a true freshman, and he got hurt. Andrew Jelks, their best offensive lineman for a year ago, who was going to be their left tackle, never played a snap. Dude who I think it was a knee injury, certainly a leg injury. And anyway, you know, they're already going to be limited, and those things happen. I think just getting their offensive line settled, having more stability at quarterback, having kid Ralph Webb who's gotten better every year, and they also got back C.J. Duncan, who would have been their best receiver. He didn't play a year ago because he was hurt, and he looked a lot better than he left off. I think he'd really come from a guy that I thought was just a, you know, get him the ball, let him make 10-yard catches, and move the chains guy to a kid that I think can make some plays for them. Look, they're still not going to be world beaters on offense, but they'll be good on defense, and they're certainly going to be better on offense. I saw some better things. I think this is a team that could get into a bowl. I'm not going to say they're going to challenge for the East or anything, but a bowl is very reasonable for them.
That's what I was going to ask. Is the goal a bowl game? And then I looked at the schedule. I mean, it seems like they open every year against South Carolina, so game one's an SEC game. Then, you know, Middle Tennessee, at Georgia Tech's not easy. At Western Kentucky's not a gimme. Home against Florida, at Kentucky, at Georgia. Then you get Tennessee State, at Auburn, at Missouri, home against Ole Miss, home against Tennessee. I've always said when you got a team that's like kind of fighting for bowl contention, and I think Missouri's going to be in the same boat this year, I would much rather have my easy games at home and my tougher games on the road, because the road games, you may lose anyway. And I mean, so going at Kentucky, at Missouri, those are games that maybe you'd think Vandy would win, but now they're road games. Their home schedule is just god-awful. I mean, Florida, Ole Miss, Tennessee, these are all teams that I think probably have designs on being in the top 20.
Yeah, I will give you the counterpoint on that. I look at these teams and I say, who has definitely got more talent than them?
Right.
Obviously, Georgia does. Obviously, Ole Miss does. Obviously, Tennessee does. Auburn does, but Auburn is a crapshoot from year to year anymore. I mean, some years they're a national top five, top ten team, and they barely make a bowl. Some years we don't expect much from Auburn, and they make the BCS title game. Or I guess it's not that anymore, but you know what I mean.
Right.
So those are kind of like the four teams. Florida, you know, is much as good as Florida was for most of last year. They win that game in Gainesville if they can just kick a stinking field goal, which they couldn't do. And Florida lost so much defensive talent, and you got a coaching change. I think at home, that one maybe, and I'm not intimately familiar with what Florida's done in the offseason, but I don't think it's a certain lose.
Right.
I look at the rest of those games. There's a lot of 50-50, 40-60 games, 60-40 games, however. I mean, South Carolina is maybe the worst team in the league coming in. I think you could make an argument. Western Kentucky's on the road an hour north of here, but Western Kentucky lost, you know, a quarterback that threw for just an unbelievable amount of yards and was like a six-year senior. So they're restocking a little bit. I just see a lot of games on that schedule. So, you know, we know what happened to Missouri-Vandy a year ago.
Right.
I just see a lot of games where it's kind of a coin flip coming in. And, you know, a lot of years you can't say that about Vandy. You can already knock off five, six games on the schedule and not going to win. I think they got a fighting shot at least, you know, two-thirds of their schedule this time.
Yeah, I think you just described most of the SEC East this year. Yeah, flip a coin, and we'll see. Last thing for you, you mentioned baseball earlier. You know, my kid went to camp down there a couple times, and I am a huge Tim Corbin fan, and this is another, in contention for a national title type team, right?
I think so. They still got some pieces they need to put together. John Kulichowski, who is probably going to be the number two starter, just threw his first pitch in a game this week, and that helps him a lot. They're really loaded, Gabe. I think they've got as many as maybe nine potential first-rounders on this team,
wow,
you know, in various draft years. I mean, and a lot of other kids that will be, you know, third-, fourth-round type players. Now, a lot of these guys have not gotten the experience they need because they were behind Dansby Swanson and kids like that, or Walker Buehler or Carson Fulmer, but It's kind of like an Alabama football analogy. You may not know the names, but you know they just reload every year. That's kind of where he was. And for the Missouri baseball fans listening, I felt a little bad for the Tigers when I watched that series because, boy, they went 3-0, but I'm telling you what, that could almost as easily have been 2-1 Missouri. And I think they kind of mailed it in on the Sunday game. But you guys, I don't know if Missouri fans – you know, all your guys listening may not be baseball guys, but, man, I'm telling you, Tanner Houck is a real deal.
Yeah,
potential 1-1 overall next year. And I was as impressed with him, and I watch a good bit of baseball. I was impressed with him maybe as much as any player I've seen this year.
Well, I do know that Missouri is now 0-11 against Vanderbilt in baseball since joining the SEC, so they may want to look into getting them off the schedule as soon as possible.
Yeah, unfortunately, you're the same division, so that may not work.
Yeah, I'm not sure that's going to happen. Chris, I appreciate it, man. I know you've been really busy, and you know what? I'm happy for you because you got to trade Kevin Stallings for a guy it sounds like you might like covering.
You know, I'd be dishonest if I told you that didn't cross my mind. I was over there for that press conference. I don't want to go too dramatic with this, but it was almost like a room full of people that had just been paroled or something. Just the whole atmosphere around that place was completely different. And you went from a guy that was just very negative a lot of times to a guy who was off the charts positive and likable. And you know how it goes in this business. It's always a lot easier to cover that kind of guy.
Yeah, it also helps if they win.
Yeah, and I think they got a fighting shot to do plenty of that down the road, too. I think they really nailed it with this guy.
All right, Chris. I appreciate it, man. We'll let you go and catch up with you later on.
Thanks, Gabe.
All right, have a good one. All right, now going to turn our attention back to Missouri. Appreciate Chris Lee from Vandy Sports joining us. But now Jarrett Sutton, formerly of the University of Missouri basketball team, going to join us for a few minutes. And, Jarrett, I am just going to turn this over to you to start with because I don't know exactly where you're at and all the planning processes and what you want to say, but you're trying to put together an event that I, for one, would really enjoy seeing. Why don't you just kind of tell us what you can about it?
Yeah, so we're in the initial phases. Last summer, I guess it would have been prior around last May. It's been about a year. I got approached by a guy in Kansas City that was really interested and wanted to get my thoughts on what it would be like to put together a Mizzou, Kansas alumni basketball game, given that both schools don't play each other.
I've heard that.
We can go on and on. We can go on and on about the rivalry. And so I think there's sort of an interest, I think, with fan bases that the idea came up, and I thought it was a good idea. The fact that they don't play, obviously Mizzou's in the SEC, it gives fans maybe something to look forward to over the summer. And what he wanted to do was try to get together a lot of alumni players, NBA guys, if they're, retired, guys like Keon Dooling, who I had the chance to meet with last week. And it was just an idea at the time. And you know how those things go. You don't know if it's going to take off. You're going to reach out to people. You're wanting to see if you can get a gym, a location. Can you get sponsors? You've never done it before. And, a year later, here we are, and we have a venue set up. We're trying to lock down a date for that, and it'll be this summer. We're hoping for sometime in June or July. But right now we're trying to get guys back. I've chatted with Marcus Denman, Lawrence Bowers, Keon Dooling, Kareem Rush, Ricky Paulding, Trayvon Bryant. Those are guys that are very much interested. But the tough thing about from the Mizzou side is guys are all over. Guys are still playing. And from the Kansas side, there's a lot of guys that are in the area. Connor Tehan, Brady Morningstar is coming back. Tyrell Reed is in the Kansas City area. And me and Tyrell Reed had a conversation about this, and he's going to try to lock down some Kansas guys. So right now we're in the process of seeing if we can get players to lock down a date. It's tough for everybody. We got a lot of guys that are still playing. I know Kansas has a lot of guys that are still playing overseas. They also have Aaron Miles on staff. We're trying to figure out if we can have people that are coaching. If we can get Kimmy back, who's coaching as well. That's an option there as well. So it's in the initial phases, but I think it's going to be a hit. This is something that Keon Dooling actually was mentioning that he would love to get involved with our alumni base, and I agree with him. I don't think we do a good enough job of bringing our alumni back together. There is an alumni weekend, with the game and during the season, but I think a lot of our former players want to get back involved in the program. And, speaking with Kareem as well, and I've had conversations with Josh Kroenke about this and guys like Ryan Kiernan, who was on that team as well, that they would like to see us come more together and maybe, not just a basketball game during the year when everybody's so busy and guys are playing overseas. It's just really hard for everybody to get back. I'm going to try to chat with Brian Grauer as well. I think it's still in the St. Louis area, but I think it's going to be a good event. It's our first year. We're going to see how it goes. Mm-hmm. I know that a lot of Kansas fans from Tyrell's standpoint are very behind it. We're going to have a gym. It looks like in Shawnee Mission, maybe one of the Blue Valley schools in the Kansas City area. Try to make it on a Saturday night. So it's not during the week. And we'll just see what kind of turnout we have. We're expecting maybe an autograph session before and after. But, it's kind of funny. We were talking, and originally it was like, it'll be a fun alumni game. But we know that with the rivalry, it's going to probably get competitive, a bunch of old guys playing. Mm-hmm. And It's going to be fun. And, you know, again, initial phases right now. We're going to try to get Sports Radio 810 behind us and try to get some sponsors as well. And we'll just see where it goes.
Well, definitely keep us kind of in the loop on what's going on. And I know there are a lot of people in Kansas City that we can reach out to that would enjoy watching it. I would have one request. If you get Keon Dooling to play, and I don't know, I know you're a little bit younger than me, so I don't know how far your memory banks goes back, but please get him to recreate the play that was still not a charge in Allen Fieldhouse. If you don't know what I'm talking about, just go to YouTube and you'll find it.
Well, you know, it's funny you mentioned that, because when he came back, you know, it was the first time he had been back to Columbia, and I met him outside the arena, and I took him down into the bottom area where the locker room, weight room is, kind of player development area of Mizzou Arena. And I had forgot that they did some changes to where the locker room is. They repainted everything. But then they finally put back up the alumni that are in the NBA or had played in the NBA. And Keon Dooling, obviously, is on that wall. And he didn't even know that. And we're walking by and he sees his name. And you could see how proud he was about that. And he brought up a lot of great moments in his career, whether it be Norm Stewart or Quinn Snyder and a lot of the players that he had played with and the reason why he came to Mizzou. And this is all stuff I didn't know. I mean, I knew who Keon Dooling was, but, you know, it had been some time for me even. So it was fun to chat with him about that. And then I, of course, had to look up the play. And my goodness, that has to be one of the nastiest dunks in Allen Fieldhouse, if I do say so.
And honestly, top five worst calls I've ever seen a college basketball official make.
I agree.
Absolutely.
I would agree with that.
Now,
I was shocked.
I don't know how it relates to, say, you know, Phil Pressey getting fouled in Allen Fieldhouse, but it's up there.
No restricted arc either.
A lot of bad calls seem to happen in that building. I know you're a Kansas City guy, so I think you're going to be biased in this, but we're talking about all these alumni. You'd love to see them play again, wouldn't you?
Absolutely. And I think it's something that I do believe that at some point it's going to have to happen. I just think now. The reality is I understand it, right? We've had this conversation before. Like,
right.
You know, we left, and I think for the Kansas side of it is, okay, you know, wish you well, but it's almost like a breakup, right? You're not coming back, and we're moving on. And so I get that part of it, but it's just too good of a rivalry. And right now I think it's kind of roles reversed, right? You know, where KU football's at, where Mizzou basketball's at. It doesn't seem feasible, but when Kansas, you know, signs the home and home with Nebraska, I think it was kind of a giant finger to us, if you will, to try to get us to play again. But I think one day it will happen. I hope it maybe could be in Kansas City too, if it's in Sprint Center or something like that. But I would love to see him play again. I just think it's too good of a rivalry. And, you know, we know it. The best day of the year for Mizzou basketball this year was seeing Kansas lose to Villanova. You know, every man was a Wildcat that night. So it's always an intriguing matchup.
Yeah, and good time to transition then. I know you love college basketball, watch a lot of it. Just I said after that title game, I wish in my life I would have one moment that was as significant or as memorable as what Chris Jenkins did that night.
Yeah, and, you know, I'll even go a little bit further, too. I was just happy to see Villanova do it. And the fact that in this day and age, you know, we talk so much about the one and done, right? And we talk about, you know, guys on NBA draft boards. And there's the conversation this year, particularly in the SEC, about LSU and Vanderbilt and these teams that had NBA talent, right, all over their rosters. And they really, you know, didn't really perform all that well. Now, Vandy gets the play-in game. But, you know, let's face it, they got kind of punked by Wichita State.
Yes.
Villanova, a bunch of guys that didn't really get much national exposure. Ryan Archidiakono, you know, grew up playing in his driveway and grew up dreaming of playing at Villanova. Both his parents went there. He didn't dream about the NBA and, you know, just a blue collar mentality with that team and just the way they did it. They did it together. They did it with toughness. They played great defense. And they had unbelievable focus and an attention to detail that I just really appreciated. It reminded me of my senior year team and just how, you know, under the radar we were before that season, but we were so focused and dialed in and there was no excuse. And we had some three stars and we had some underrated guys. And, you know, we had guys that really bled black and gold and, you know, guys that put so much time in and would be in the gym 24/7, you know, wanted to work on their games and We always had the phrase "play hard, act right," and I just thought that was Villanova. Mm-hmm. And what a run that they had! And that title game was unbelievable. I mean, the Marcus Page shot.
I was going to say. Chris Jenkins hit a buzzer beater to win the national title, and it wasn't the best shot of the last three minutes.
Right, and I think Marcus Page even. He's just trying to draw a foul. And, he knows that they're going to, Villanova's probably going to try to foul up three. And just the fact that he was trying to create contact, and then it goes in, and he just hits a big-time shot. And, credit North Carolina, too. They were down 10. I mean, they did some good things to get back in the game and hit some big shots down the stretch. But, man, what a great design play from Villanova. And I love Jay Wright, too. I just think he's a stand-up guy. There's already talk of him now. I know the Phoenix Suns today. It came out that they got some interest in him. Doesn't surprise me. He's got the demeanor for the NBA that I think is attractive to a lot of GMs. So, but I just thought the national championship game for a tournament that, and after the first weekend was fantastic. But after that, it was blowouts. And even in the Final Four, how disappointing. I was so excited for Villanova, Oklahoma, and for Oklahoma to just get destroyed. And really just almost, it was painful sometimes to watch. But the national championship was fantastic. And, hey, we'll always remember Chris Jenkins. What a moment.
No question. Last thing, I got to ask you, not necessarily your personal thoughts, but just you said you've been talking to quite a few alums. I mean, what's kind of the talk among the former players here about where this thing's at Missouri right now and what it takes to get it going back again?
I will say it, Gabe, and I've said it, and my role on the team was I was a walk-on. I was fortunate enough to earn a scholarship, but I was not a star player by any means. My role was in practice. But even talking to guys like Keon Dooling, who is a name that every Missouri basketball fan will know, to guys like Marcus Denman, who is one of the toughest players I've ever played against or with in my life. And guys, the overwhelming theme that they say to me and is that there is no excuse when you step into Mizzou Arena because it's such an unbelievable facility. You have a weight room. You have a practice gym. You're in-state, right? You're the in-state school. And that's important because I do believe that there's enough talent in the state of Missouri. We can talk about it now. We can talk about it when I was in high school. I mean, there's always good talent in Kansas City and St. Louis. And we know as former players that we're not going to get five-star guys every, recruiting period. But we can bring in good talent here, and we can compete. And I will always say that not just our fan base, but our former players, they're going to get behind you. If you play hard, if you give a fight, if you're in games. And I think right now the feeling around the program is just disappointment. Because when we made the move to the SEC, the initial thought from basketball guys were, we're going to compete in the SEC, and we're going to have a chance to win the league titles. We're going to have a chance to be in that conversation with the top three, four teams in the league. And here we are at the very bottom. And where this league's going, the coaches that are coming into this league, it's getting more competitive. And I guess I'm kind of biased in that I think the SEC does get some disrespect. Yeah, they didn't have a great season from a league perspective, but they do have good talent. There is good coaches in this league. I felt bad for Frank Martin in South Carolina not getting in. I thought they deserved at least a play-in game. That's neither here nor there, and that's in the past. But I just think where the conference is going, and it's tough to watch a fan base get that apathetic feeling where they just don't care. And that's what I felt as a freshman. And by the time we left my senior year, our fan base was excited. We gave them something to get behind. We didn't have unbelievable five-star talents. We weren't in the top 20 players, top 50 players. We had some good guys that came in, and Phil Pressey, but guys came here, they worked really hard, they'd improved, they were four-year guys, and they made no excuse. There was no excuse. It was a team ball, and I think that's why our fans were behind us, and I think that's why a lot of guys that played here were behind us, guys that we continue to talk to now, that, say how proud they were watching us. And I think that was kind of special to hear Keon Dooling say, he used to watch us in the NBA when he was playing NBA games. He'd do whatever he could to get done with the game just to watch us play. I mean, that means a lot. And so I think it's a rich tradition. It's a great program. It's a great place to go to school, and it's a great place to play basketball. And I just hope it continues to possibly get that respect back as we go forward. But there is no excuse with these guys. You know, I think this is a good program, and I just want to see it get back to where it was.
Well, Jared, I appreciate your time, man. And like I said, keep us posted on the potential alumni game. It's definitely something I'd like to get up and see, if nothing else, to remember some of the guys I really hated watch playing when I was in college.
I got to share with you one quick story I think you'll love, Gabe. We got to talking, and we're talking about rosters, right? And I had to throw this out there. I'm like, all right, well, we should probably talk about guys that are still playing or in shape. You know, we got to probably have a big roster so we can have guys get subbed out. And we started throwing out names of, you know, I said, well, you better have Sherron Collins on that roster because we all know he's out of shape. And I thought that got some good laughs from some KU guys, and they kind of were throwing some names at me. So it'll be fun. Make no mistake about it. It'll be a competitive night. So I hope we can get it going. I'll be sure to keep you posted, and I hope Mizzou fans will get excited about it.
All right, Jared. Have a good one, man.
All right, thanks, kid.
All right, see you. Jared Sutton, former Mizzou Tiger, he and Tyrell Reed trying to get an MUKU alumni game together. Listen, I know there are fans out there. I don't want to play them in anything, and that's fine. If you feel that way, you feel that way. Whatever. I don't agree with you, but you're welcome to feel that way. I think it'd be fun. It'd be a cool night. There would be a lot of guys there that I'd love to go cover it and see if the guys I kind of grew up not being able to stand were actually decent people that maybe I would be able to stand. But it'd be some good names on the other side. And obviously, if they could get guys like Keon and Marcus and Lawrence, guys like that, it'd be a lot of fun for Missouri fans too. So we'll keep you posted what we hear on that. Again, thanks to Jared. Thanks to Chris Lee from Vandy Sports. Over the next few weeks, we are going to check in around the SEC East schools, then check in at LSU and Arkansas, who Missouri will play this year in football. Mizzou's spring game coming up next Saturday. We will cover that. And like you guys, we will be learning a lot because I am long removed from being a Mizzou student, so I cannot see Thursday afternoon scrimmage, which should be going on about the time many of you are listening to this. And who knows? I will know nothing about it. So next week, though, we'll talk some black and gold game. We'll look around the SEC, all that. Thanks for listening to the podcast, and we'll be back next Thursday.